TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media.
If you want to know the real deal about the three, we're going to take you with triple chop. We're going to bring you up to speed.
TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at www.tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe.
Guess who's back?
And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by the hot dog man himself, Ezra Ginsberg, and the guy that we like to call Mr. Instagram, Richard Pollock.
I'm actually TSN Radio's Kobayashi. Just so everyone knows out there, where, you know, we get to the studio and Remus informs me that, you know, there was some hot dogs being cooked up here.
Get to the studio at 10 to 9 in the morning, yeah, on Saturday.
So yeah.
After you had a muffin ready.
No, I didn't have a muffin.
Sorry, you had a piece of pie. What did you have?
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay.
So Remus cooked up a couple hot dogs. So we just enjoyed a couple hot dogs before the show. I know, I realize it's, you know, 9 in the morning here, but no, we cooked up a couple hot dogs. They were really good, actually. And we're ready to go now.
Now that you have the energy necessary to pull off a two-hour program, we should all be in good hands. Anyways, jam-packed show for you this morning, coming up in about 30 minutes' time. From the Rally News and Observer, Chip Alexander is going to join us to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes offseason. Been probably the most active NHL team, or if not the most, then certainly right up at the top. Spent a ton of money, so we'll talk to Chip Alexander about the new look Carolina Hurricanes. We'll be seeing them maybe six times this year, depending on how CBA negotiations play out. Mm-hmm. But for the, you know, maximum of six, we know that much so far. Coming up at 10 a.m., we're going to be joined by Bobby Holik. You know him, ex of the New Jersey Devils, the New York Rangers, and the Atlanta Thrashers. He now runs his own hockey website, holikonhockey.com. He's going to join us at 10 o'clock, talk about the CBA negotiations, things of that nature, from an ex-player's perspective and one who's still very much in touch with the day-to-day activities and the goings on in the NHL. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve.
Ezzy, do you want to do the impression?
I don't think you'll ever be able to say that after we did that impression last week.
Actually, the impression that I enjoyed the most when I was listening to the replay, you know, I was listening to the podcast of the program when I came back from my trip, is the one where you started in a Drew impression, then somehow morphed it in the middle of the impression.
That's true.
And then ended it in some sort of odd hybrid of a Drew and Ezzy merging into one.
Do you want, Ezzy, do the Twitter Facebook again? You want to let Drew do it?
No, I can't.
We can't
impersonate Drew when he's on air, but what Richie and I said last week was that if you had never listened to the show before, I mean, people that listen to the show on a regular basis know we're putzes, but people that haven't listened to the show before, if they had just tuned in randomly, they would have thought we had multiple personality disorder.
That's true.
Yeah. That's a fair point. I'll grant you that. Anyways, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website for all your latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen.
Drew, you do Drew better than anyone else.
You do you better than anyone else.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I don't think it's I think it's just being myself as opposed to doing myself. But, you know, I appreciate the compliment nonetheless. Let's get started with CBA negotiations. Unfortunately, for better or worse, well, that's what we have to talk about. Yep. Fortunately, there is some NHL news later on in the program we can get to. The NHLPA has counteroffered. You know, they made their counteroffer to the NHL earlier this week, and they sort of billed it as a whole new wave of looking at
the
finances of the NHL.
To not give the NHL, you know, they kind of want to discredit the NHL's original offer. So by doing that, they're making a separate offer, which really doesn't at all have to do with anything the NHL put forward originally.
That's right. The NHL gave them their offer and they chose to ignore it. They didn't counter it. They didn't even really reference it at all. They said, okay, we're just ignoring that altogether. They could never happen. So what they came out with, the gist, is they've offered to de-link their salaries for the next three seasons from a percentage of hockey-related revenue. So, you know, right now we're in this, you know, we've been hearing about the back and forth between 57% of revenues, 56, 50, 43, whatever number you want to make up and throw out there.
Quick aside, yes, you're going to go through the kind of the entire offer.
Yeah.
Hockey-related revenues, as far as I know, hockey-related revenues in the PA's offer is not goes unchanged from how it's currently defined, whereas in the NHL offer, not only do they want to cut salaries, but they also wanted to minimize or to lessen hockey-related revenue and right. have a little bit more of a specific definition, which would thereby give the owners more money that wouldn't count inside the...
Exactly. What it more or less will do is it'll reduce the pool yes. of money that... that's what the, I mean, the owners are... I mean, in that first first proposal, which we all know was a pie-in-the-sky dream proposal,
mm-hmm.
You know, they were trying to reduce the... They were trying to reduce the percentage of money available to the players and reduce the pool
that's right.
in which that,
that's
that money right. comes from. So pretty much what the... You know, the players came to the owners and said, look, pretty much we'll take the same amount of money, you know, that they currently have, that they currently get. Right now they got they would get $1.91 billion in money in 2012-2013, $1.98 billion in 2013 and 2014, and $2.1 billion in 2014-2015. So the owners supposedly get cost certainty for the next 3 years. We know that the players are going to get X amount of money, with the only caveat being if league revenues grow at more than 10% a year, the percentage that the players would get would increase a little bit. Other than that, free agency, salary arbitration, entry-level contracts, contract lengths all stay the same for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And you should mention that stays the same from the previous CBA, not the NHL's first offer.
Oh, well, the NHL's first offer
yes.
is not on
and,
the table.
And that's right. one thing yeah. that, I mean, the truth of the matter is that's the biggest sticking point. I mean, there are many sticking points here, but the owners are not going to essentially put this off for 4 years.
Right.
They're not going to. There's absolutely no chance of it happening.
That's what the players are saying is we'll take, you know, the players realize that
American contract, TV contract I'm speaking about with NBC, it's about $200 million a year, kicks in next year.
Right.
The rights for hockey, broadcasting hockey in Canada, NHL hockey in Canada, expire after the next after 2 years.
After 2013-2014.
That's right. So not after this season, but after the following season. And that is going to be a bonanza of bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going to happen is, essentially, you have very little money right now from an American deal and good money from a Canadian deal. You're going to have way more money from a Canadian deal in 2 years and basically $200 million than you do have from an American deal. So, I mean, you could be tripling the amount of money you're making from television and you're probably going to beat that 10% threshold. So the players aren't stupid here.
No, the players certainly aren't stupid. They never are. I mean, then you wouldn't expect them to be. But, I mean, what it really boils down to is the players are sort of saying to the owners, we like the current situation,
yeah.
as they should.
Absolutely.
And it's no fault of the players that
no.
they're in the current situation because
no.
this is the
no.
deal that the owners signed for themselves. Remember, the owners quote-unquote won the previous CBA negotiations.
Right.
It just so happens that as they won, the league's revenue skyrocketed, the players were able to reap the rewards at the same time.
Well, I want to get in here really quickly, though. I mean, I think as far as the lost season back in 2004-2005, the owners came out of that lockout, and they definitely won because they got cost certainty. As far as the last 8 years go, I think you can make the argument that both the players and owners have won, but the players have won in the fact that the salary cap has gone up from $39 million to $70 million. But
the owners have thereby won also because that means it's tied
right,
to revenues.
Right, absolutely. And the owners, you know, revenue's gone up consistently, and we were talking about this off air. You know, ticket prices have gone up to the point where, you know, it's gone up the same amount that salaries have gone up, really, if you think about it, 25%, I think, was the number that was quoted in the Globe and Mail. But the NHLPA offer, the problem is, I think they should be commended for their offer. And in that,
I don't think anybody should be commended for anything.
Well, hold on.
You can get commendation when you sign an agreement.
Okay, fair enough. But the NHLPA didn't just come back and with your traditional offer and say, you know, go through all of the NHL's offer and basically come back with, you know, the other end of the spectrum. But the problem with the NHLPA offer is it's short and it doesn't address
well,
the core economic issues.
Let's talk about that right now. The problem, the NHLPA offer is 3 years in term under the new rules.
That's
with
right.
a fourth year that has the option of reverting back to what the CBA was last season.
Right.
So first of all, I don't want to go down this road again in 4 years. It's too soon to go down this road again in eight years' time. Never mind 4 years' time. So that to me, first of all, is probably a deal breaker. Nobody wants to do this again in 4 years. You look at the CBA negotiations that were just signed in the NFL and in the NBA. They were all 10-year CBA negotiations where you have, you know that you're going to have labor peace for the next 10 years. I think that's probably
and
a minimum.
If I recall correctly, the NBC-NHL deal is 10 years, is it not?
I believe it is.
So that's 10 years. If a Canadian deal ends up being 10 years, then why not just line them all up?
It makes perfect sense as long as you got the TV revenues coming in, you can agree to a CBA that's a similar length in time.
Exactly.
My question is, first of all, I don't know enough about the legalities around this. I know that the NFL when the NFL had just signed their new TV deals, and they did it prior to their last negotiation, there was a clause there that said the owners get paid, or the league gets their TV revenues, even if there's a work stoppage.
From what I read,
I believe that was then later declared null and void in a courtroom as a bad labor practice, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure about that, but what I read from Larry Brooks of the New York Post, he said that NBC will be playing the league during the period because who's running in the back show there, Comcast and everybody?
Ed Snyder.
So
essentially funding
their own lockout.
Which to me, and that's the question I have.
It's conflict of interest, likely.
And I don't know enough about the U.S. legalities of the whole situation. But in the NFL, that was initially the deal that the owners had signed vis-a-vis their TV deal. That was declared null and void by the courts. I believe the court in Minnesota, which is where the players decertified as a union, declared that to be null and void.
We're talking like $6-7 million a team.
Yeah. It's not as much. You're right. Yeah. You're talking about a
30 teams, 200 mil.
You're right. You're talking about a first line player here. And you're not talking about
this. I'm just guessing 6.7 million a year.
Something like that. You're not talking about big money that you're talking about regarding the
NFL. How much time?
Well, it's like $1 billion a team, practically. It's not quite that much, but it's about, $300 million
a team. That NFL owner makes money before he sells a ticket.
Right, because he pays off he pays off all the team's salaries through the TV money and then some.
Right.
So, if you can ever afford to become an NFL owner, it's almost a guaranteed profit in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the NHL is not anywhere near that boat. But the fact that the owners are still going to get a $200 million windfall this year, win or lose, playing or not playing.
But there's two sides to this, Drew. I mean, Ed Snyder's not in the business, or NBC's not in the business, excuse me, NBC itself. I guess GE and whoever else. NBC is not in the business of giving out $200 million for free.
Right.
I mean, they're going to want a season. So maybe they won't have the beginning of the season when October, November, they don't have great ratings anyways. But there will be a season if that's going to be a determining factor and if there's a season. 100%.
Well, and that's why everybody's pointing to...
I can't stand that this whole Winter Classic is the breaking point.
Well, that's what I was going to say there.
But this waste of a game. It's like, the celebration of a game that Gary Bettman created. Oh, my God. The three-hour game outside... Which is cool, but like the quality of the game is brutal because the ice always sucks.
It's just simply not true. I mean, there are other pressures. I mean, if you think about it, a team like the Winnipeg Jets, and
everything's for the U.S.
It is for the U.S. But the fact is the owners are united. But
I don't think the owners are united. In fact, I want to go to break, and let's come back and talk about the supposed united front of the owners. Because from what
if
I
they're
can
not
see,
united, they have to be united.
Well, from what I can see,
there wouldn't be a lockout if
the issues that the top owners have versus the bottom owners are two very different issues that I think the players can exploit. Let's talk about that on the other side. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up next segment, Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer is going to join us. This segment is brought to you by Carbona, a coal-fired pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbona, a coal-fired pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Well done. Some great lunch specials, some great drink specials over at Carbona, a coal-fired pizza. For a good time, check them out on Taylor Avenue. Right around the corner from both of your guys' homesteads.
Yep. River Heights.
As your homestead.
I grew up on the mean streets of River Heights, Drew.
Mm-hmm. Those are very mean streets, I'm sure, nonetheless.
Yeah, they are.
I know. You look like you had some trouble.
At night?
Yeah, at night.
People walk their dogs. It can be very scary.
Let's talk about
lots of big dogs out there.
Before we went to break, we were getting started or about to start talking about the owners. And to me, the main problem that the NHL has from a negotiating standpoint is, the number of owners that they have two groups of owners. They have two classes of owners, and it doesn't seem like they're ever the top class is ever looking out for the bottom class.
Maybe, but I mean, I wrote about this on Overtime this week. Why are the teams that are losing money, why are they always the one driving the bus? And I think another thing I want to point out, you always hear about Gary Bettman.
Do you think they are driving the bus?
I don't think they are this time.
I think a lot of them are, for sure. They're getting in there, we need to make money, we need to lose money, we need to figure this out. It's like, well, how about you figure out your own business plan? If it doesn't work, then get out. This is another thing. People say, Gary Bettman represents the owners. So don't get mad at Gary Bettman personally because he represents the owners. Well, that's fine. And that's true that he represents the owners. But Gary Bettman has done a great job of representing his own self-interest from day one.
Absolutely.
The Phoenix Coyotes are sitting there, they're a mess. Nashville's losing money. No matter if they're successful in terms of their front office and fans, they're a mess. They can't make money. Florida, losing money. All these teams, they lose money every year. And then he wonders why. And I'll tell you why. Because Bettman can't get off his high horse and admit there's a mistake. Look how long it took him to get rid of Atlanta. Obviously, with Phoenix now. Phoenix is a joke. It's actually become the biggest joke. I can't believe it's not talked about more as the biggest joke.
Well, it's not talked about anymore.
It's worse than the Montreal Expos.
It's not talked about anymore because, just for that reason, it is a joke. So when people actually can't take it serious anymore, Greg Jamieson, we keep hearing Greg Jamieson, if that.
Greg Jamieson buys the Coyotes. And for the purposes of this conversation, let's say he successfully pulls it off. Does anybody believe he actually has any money to withstand more than, say,
the Devils too?
Six months of losses?
And so why are the teams at the top? So you have the big teams in the NHL. Chicago, 2 years ago, won the Cup. Three seasons ago, I guess it is, won the Cup. It's, hockey's back in Chicago. Great job by the ownership there of promoting the game, getting a new TV deal. Boston won the Cup 2 years ago. Great interest. They're up there with all the other teams. You have L.A. L.A., what you want? We just won the Cup. The Lakers just got Howard and Nash, but the Kings won the Cup. They're in the storyline. The Rangers were two games away from winning the Stanley Cup. Detroit always wins the Stanley Cup. Pittsburgh's there with the two best players. So I wrote about all these successful organizations and the top teams, Chicago, New York, L.A., they're all at the top right now. They're all making money. They're all successful. Why would you want to shut it down? You want to shut it down because Phoenix can't make money or Nashville or Florida can't make money?
Well, you need to shut down those organizations is what
that's
you need
the point.
To do.
And I said to you, and we'll talk to Bobby Holik about it, what about putting another roster spot or two on these teams to make up for the jobs you lose by taking these teams away? It's enough already. And the Canadian teams are all making money hand over fist. They are.
Yeah.
And the Jets can prove they can survive last year on no revenue sharing. Maybe you need some revenue sharing, but they can survive on no revenue sharing.
Do you think it's fair to still call the Jets a small market team?
No, I don't. And if you look at the fact that, look at the ownership. The ownership of the Winnipeg Jets is extremely strong, both in the way they run the organization and money. David Thompson is one of the wealthiest people, along with Mark Chipman, who's a very successful businessman. And then you've got the fact that they had the highest merchandise sales in the entire league.
And that will change.
That's going to be a one-year phenomenon.
Granted, I'm trying to show that Winnipeg is a strong market. You've got season ticket sales. We sold out our season tickets. I'm not sure if this has ever been verified, but I'm pretty sure those 13,000 season tickets selling is some type of professional sports record. It has to be. I don't know how you could ever sell season tickets faster than that. But the point is, no, they're not a small market team in the sense of the amount of revenue that they generate. As far as the size of the city, that doesn't matter. I mean, the fact is, look at Green Bay. Green Bay, I think, is a good analogy, and you should hear it again and again. The Winnipeg Jets are the Green Bay Packers of the NHL.
You can't compare the NHL and the NFL.
Look at the teams.
But
okay,
I'm just saying how successful they are in a small market.
Look at the teams. New York's at the top. Chicago, Boston, mentioned them. L.A., Philadelphia, too. Every year they're making money. They're making a run for it, right? They're paying Brizgalov crazy money. Hold on, Detroit, Pittsburgh, all seven Canadian teams. Look at the rest of the teams quickly. Minnesota must be doing well enough to be paying $200 million to Parise and Suter, right? I mean, you have Dallas, who's got new ownership going in the right direction. The Sharks have a really well-run organization, right? The Hurricane just went out and spent a boatload of money all summer. We'll talk to Chip Alexander about that next segment. Buffalo spent tons of money last year with new owner Terry Pegula. Honestly, Tampa has pretty strong management. They're finding ways to make money. The Capitals are successful. we're dealing with 5 to 6 teams that just really can't make it work, and suddenly we're going to hold out for this long. Yep. And I realize also the teams are holding out for greed. We know that. They want more money. And so, as I wrote about in the article, the interests of the poor owners and rich owners aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, if the poor owners get a deal that make them more money, the rich owners probably get more money as well. But do they make up for the money they lose for the time that they're out? I don't know. But why, in reality, if all of these teams are making money, for the most part, the big teams are making cash, who's the lockout for?
It's for greed, like you said.
And it's for the teams that are losing money who don't care if they sit out because they probably lose less money if they sit out.
Sure, because they don't have to pay anybody. I mean, that's where they lose all their money. They lose their money because they have to pay out so much in salary, you know, a minimum of $50 million
in salaries. And the question, I guess it is, how much of that is greed and how much of that is the poor teams not caring if they play?
And you can come to the conclusion that because there are those 5 or 6 teams, in reality, we know there's more like 12 to 15 teams that are losing money, the players are now being asked to take a haircut for those losses.
Do I feel bad for the Islanders running their team into the ground?
No.
Or Columbus running their team into the ground? Columbus had a nice base there for a while. They ran the team into the ground with poor management. So suddenly the players take the hit because Scotty Howson doesn't know what he's doing in the manager's seat right now?
And he's still in the manager's seat?
But I'm saying, like, how much of it is poor management? How much and how much of that is causing the lack of funds flowing in?
Well, look, we know that winning cures all ills. I mean, you know, we saw the Florida Panthers got some of a crowd last year because they were a winning team.
You drop a team into the Florida market that can hardly sell at the Heat.
Yeah.
And they're going to try and sell the Panthers and make money?
It's a bad sports town. If you're a bad sports town, it doesn't matter.
Who put them there?
Well, the NHL. Gary Bettman put them there. I mean, no argument from me. You're right. They're putting they put a lot of teams where they don't belong. You won't get an argument from me out of that. When Nashville has to win 3 playoff rounds just to maybe
pay
Shea
Weber's salary.
Just to break even.
That's right.
It's not a and they have a good fan base, but you know,
look at Colorado, for example. Colorado's now losing money.
Sure, hand over fist, because they haven't been good for the last 5 years.
And the fans have left.
How did they do in their late 90s, early 2000s?
As an on-ice product, they were the best team in the league.
They're creme de la creme.
Yeah, well, they were at least getting the revenue in from attendance. Now that revenue has dropped dramatically.
Yeah, because they've run the team essentially into the ground with terrible management for a long period of time. Now they're on their way back up.
Unfortunately, with the exception of the Canadian teams and some of the, you know, and some of the bigger American teams, you know, you have to... you know, with the exception of those teams, in order to be successful at the box office, you have to consistently be a winner. You know, if the Jets are bad for another couple of years, with all due respect, the fans are still going to go. Same with in Ottawa, well, maybe less so in Ottawa, but Toronto's been terrible for however many years now, and the fans still attend, they don't think twice about it.
Montreal.
Nobody's ever paying.
Calgary. You know,
nobody's taking a tag day for any of those teams.
Edmonton.
The teams that rely the most on being successful on the ice are the teams that really shouldn't, or the cities that really shouldn't have teams because it doesn't draw unless they're good.
Well, let me ask you that. Back to the question I was saying, I asked kind of rhetorically before, but let me ask you this. You know, how much of this is driven by greed and how much of it is driven by the 5, 6, 7, 8 teams at the bottom who can't make it work?
I think it is those two things.
It's probably a combination of both.
You know, it is those two things. And the reality is, I mean, everyone sees the end game here. If anybody thinks there's going to be a long lockout, there isn't going to be. It's going to be 1 to 3 months. The end game is going to be a split where you see the players basically accepting 52% of the revenue.
Exactly.
And then 3 or 4 years from now, you're not going to see a team in Phoenix. You're not going to see a team possibly in Florida. You're not going to see a team in some of these places.
I don't necessarily agree with you. There shouldn't be teams there.
There won't be a team in Phoenix in 3 or 4 years.
Why? What's going to change between now and years down the road?
That manipulates the rules. I mean, why did they charge the Jets that much to buy Phoenix, to Atlanta, the free market system?
Yeah, well, because I mean, why? Because they're greedy. Because they can't get their.
They want Phoenix.
Look, why did they put all these teams in these cities that don't belong there in the first
expansion
place?
Expansion fees.
Expansion fees. They got greedy. Yeah. If you're an owner, if somebody comes to you and say, "Hey, I'd like to buy a team and put it in, you know, Rancho Cucamonga, New Mexico," sure, no problem. We'll be glad to put a team there, even if it's not going to be successful. Okay. It's just going to cost you $160 million.
Let's get Remus to tweet that out. Rancho Cucamonga is
the next...
It's
actually in California. It's not in New Mexico, but whatever.
Wasn't that with us Friday and next Friday, the movies? Wasn't that where it took place?
I have absolutely no
Remo,
idea.
Remo, check that out.
Anyways, the point is, you know, the current owners say, yes, I want free money.
Yep.
And that's what expansion fees are for them. It's free money. It's free money, and it's the poor Jets who wants to put the team in the bad spot that has to deal with the ramifications
and all the real
a year and 2 years down
it.
The road. The fact that he's got no fans and his team sucks. Oh, and then he cries poverty and wants to take it off of the back of the players.
Or the taxpayers.
Or the taxpayers, as the case is in Phoenix, because that's the only... Or in Glendale. And we should say Glendale, because I honestly think the people of Phoenix aren't as stupid as the leadership in Glendale.
True. The main point is the owners and the teams in the NHL, and we'll tweet Richie's article out, because it was a good article and explained it properly, because there is... You know, there is the elite seven or eight, you know, the Bostons and that, and then the Canadian teams are up there too, Toronto, Montreal.
It's half the league
right there. It's half the league. The reality is the owners and the teams are doing better than they were 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and now it's those two, there's a few teams, and at the bottom, the Phoenixes and the Islanders and all that, and that's why I think, you know, action needs to be taken to fix that, because we could be in a position, again, 10 years from now, with the same thing. The weak franchises are the reason why we're having this lockout, in addition to, you know, obviously keeping player salaries in check. But, I mean, it's time to move Phoenix to Quebec, and it's time to, you know, move the Islanders to Brooklyn, whatever. I mean, it's not working in these cities, and it hasn't been for a long time. It's time to address those issues.
Quickly, I know we're going to break here. I just want to say this also. The owners are looking to have a system that's tighter than it was before, and that's going to be restricting contract term, restricting this, restricting that. I'm just asking this question. Does NHL want to become like the National Basketball Association, where contracts are essentially traded for contracts? There's no actual trades anymore.
You have franchises moving around all the time.
But I'm not. You're trading salary cap space. You have max contract for max contract. Everything is slotted. There's no creativity in the game. Yeah. There's two teams that are actually going to contend. The players drive it to those two teams, the Lakers and the Heat. The league is essentially irrelevant in 20 markets.
It's a four-team league.
And there's the GM creativity is gone. So in baseball, you have all the creativity in the world, and the NBA, you have no creativity. If I'm a fan, I want baseball system more than I want the NBA system.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Chip Alexander of the Rally News and Observer is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website, where I'm reliably informed that the Winnipeg Jets morning papers are now up and available, is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the airwaves of TSN 1290, Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer. Chip, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, how's everything going?
Doing very well up here in Winnipeg. How's things down in Carolina?
Well, I think things are a little slow right now. I think a lot of people are interested in how the Hurricanes will be doing this year, but they're wondering when they'll be playing. And I think, you know, the optimists would like to think that first game is still going to be in Winnipeg, but I guess we'll find out in the next month or two.
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I don't know if I'd put a bet on that one, but optimism is a good thing, no doubt. Chip, you know, you look at all the teams that have made moves in the offseason, and the Carolina Hurricanes have certainly been one of the most active teams, if not the most active team. Coming into this offseason, there was a lot of talk that the Hurricanes were going to spend money. They definitely did that. Are you surprised at the amount of money that the team has spent?
Well, you know, what they said and what they did is exactly what I guess Carolina Hurricanes fans were hoping for, which is they said they were going to invest more money and try to really, you know, enhance the team. And they talked, Jim Rutherford talked immediately after the season about going out and getting some top six forwards to help out with a team that has really been, you know, struggled offensively at times the past couple of years. And you know, right there, right off the bat at the NHL draft in Pittsburgh, they make the big trade for Jordan Staal, and certainly they get involved with the Zach Parise sweepstakes, and certainly Minnesota wind up winning that. And the next thing you know, they're signing Alexander Semin. So these were not inexpensive moves, and certainly they gave Jordan Staal a 10-year extension. Semin's a 1-year deal, but will cost $7 million. So that's the kind of money that Hurricanes have not been throwing around, you know, in their history since they've come to North Carolina. So, you know, a lot of fans think that's a step in the right direction, obviously.
Chip, Jordan Staal, you mentioned, acquired at the draft in Pittsburgh just recently in June. He didn't come cheap. The team had to give up Brandon Sutter. You know, these players, I guess, will inevitably be compared to each other for the rest of their careers. What do you think Jim Rutherford, how does Jim Rutherford think, I mean, with your conversations with him, think Jordan Stallworth will turn out as a player as compared to Brandon Sutter?
Well, you know, you're right. They did not want to give up Brandon Sutter. In fact, with the conversations I had with Jim Rutherford leading up to that, he's one of the names that was mentioned as a guy that they probably wouldn't trade, along with the Jeff Skinners and the Stalls and Wards, those kind of things. In fact, at one point, it was almost as if Brandon Sutter was kind of an untouchable guy. But, you know, as Rutherford said, to get somebody like Jordan Stahl, you probably got to give up something that you don't want to do, and that was certainly Brandon Sutter. And, you know, they feel like Jordan Stahl playing, obviously, in Pittsburgh behind Crosby and Malkin, wasn't able to really show all the things he can do offensively and can certainly prosper and become a, you know, a really good two-way player with Carolina and produce the kind of offensive skills that Jordan Stahl thinks he's capable of. And, you know, with Brandon, feels the same way. And I've always been a big fan of Brandon Sutter's and feel like, obviously, his role with Carolina was as a checking center, didn't get much power play time, and I'm not going to say he'll be a 30 or 35 goal scorer, but I certainly can see Brandon Sutter being a very consistent 25 goal scorer, and maybe more than that as he gets bigger and stronger. But the very smart player, Pittsburgh, I think it'll be a very easy fit for Pittsburgh, and I think it'll be a very easy fit for Jordan Stahl coming to the Hurricanes.
You know, one of the reasons, well, the main reason really, Chip, that Jordan Stahl was traded was that he couldn't agree on terms for an extension with the Pittsburgh Penguins, who offered him a fair amount of money. When he came over to Carolina, was his signing that long-term deal a formality?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know how much was kind of understood behind the scenes. I think Jordan Stahl had told the Penguins that he really wanted to go into that last year before free agency and see what was out there. And I don't know how much of the Penguins' 10-year offer was kind of almost after the fact, kind of understanding he's going to leave, let's throw it out there. But I know that certainly there was a strong feeling that Jordan Stahl did want to play with Eric Stahl. There's always been a very tight bond between those two brothers, and this was the opportunity to do it. And I was told that if the Hurricanes had not been able to arrange that deal in Pittsburgh at the draft, that the New York Rangers who, oddly enough, obviously have another Stahl brother, were waiting in the wings to make a big offer that same night. So it was a situation where the Hurricanes feel like they had to go ahead and get it done. And part of that was giving up Brandon Sutter. So it was a huge deal. Certainly opened a lot of eyes among Hurricanes fans.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Chip Alexander, Hurricanes beat writer for the Rally News and Observer.
Chip, now that the Hurricanes have the Stahl brothers, and you know Kirk Muller, you know, has those two weapons at his disposal, do we know if he plans on using them on the top two lines, or do we know if he's going to try using them maybe on the same line?
Well, as soon as you know, and Kirk Muller was not able to attend the draft, but a few days later, I was able to pose that question to him because that was the one everyone wanted to know, and he said initially that he did want to look at both Stahls playing on the same line. And obviously this was before the signing of a Simmons. So, you know, you may see Stahl, and Simmons as your top line with the, you know, the next line having Ruutu, maybe Jokinen and Skinner on it, which gives the Hurricanes a pretty strong top six there. But my gut feeling, if you ask me, is as the year progresses, you're probably going to see the Stahl brothers both centering lines. I feel like that'll probably be the strongest, you know, the strongest situation for the Hurricanes. But initially, yes, I think Kirk Muller said you'll see them together, and I think you will.
Chip, one of the brightest young players in the NHL is the Carolina Hurricanes' Jeff Skinner. He still had 1 year left to go on his entry-level deal, and then the Canes signed him to this long-term contract extension, a cap hit $5.725 million. Why did Jim Rutherford go ahead and get this deal done when there still was that 1 year left on an entry-level deal before Skinner even would get into restricted free agency?
Well, we don't know what's going to happen with the CBA, among other things, and certainly they're talking about contract limits, so that might have been an opportunity to go ahead and strike, you know, before all this gets hammered out. So, but there's been a very strong commitment between both Jeff Skinner to the Hurricanes and the Hurricanes to Skinner, and I know he certainly has greatly enjoyed playing down here. He, you know, obviously his first year he was treated like a kind of a teen idol down here, rock star treatment, and which may have startled him a little bit, but a fan favorite, I mean, you go to the games, all you see are 53, you know, jerseys all over the arena, and he's the kind of player that they just feel like they can build behind as part of the core. And I think Jim Rutherford has really tried to put together this core of five or six players with longer-term contracts and then build around it. And Jeff Skinner obviously is a big part of that. Had a, you know, a disappointing season really last year because of the concussion that knocked him out of 16 games, and he really wasn't able to regain his form almost till the end of the season, but came off a good World Championships. Very much impressed Kirk Muller there, and I just feel like that Rutherford felt like the time was right to go ahead and get this hammered out before the CBA, which they did.
Chip, why does Jim Rutherford think that Alex Semin is worth the risk?
Well, he's worth the one-year risk, and I feel like that, you know, obviously they got to see him a lot in Washington, and it seemed like every game that they saw him, he was scoring a goal against the Hurricanes. So maybe it's almost addition by subtraction from one to the other, but or addition and subtraction, which it could hurt the Caps. But, you know, it was a situation where they really wanted to add that one more scoring forward. I know they were in, you know, they talked to a number of players. Shane Doan, obviously, is a guy that they were looking at, a couple others, and it kept coming back to Semin. And I think they weren't willing to go 2 or 3 years, and obviously no other team was either. And Alexander Semin could have gone back to play in the KHL, but obviously he wants to stay in the NHL. So it worked out for both parties. I think you're going to see Semin get a lot of minutes with the Hurricanes, which is something he wants. And, you know, we'll just have to see how he fits in the room and how he fits in with the team chemistry. And that's always been a question about him. And I've seen him play, you know, the last 4 years, and I've seen him play good games and seen him play bad. And I just feel like for 1 year and $7 million, they felt like it was worth the risk. And, you know, there is risk involved. You talk to some of the Hurricanes fans, and they act like this is a great addition, and there is no risk involved, but there's $7 million involved in, right, in certainly chemistry issues. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Chip, one of the lower-profile moves that the Hurricanes made was bringing back Joe Corvo. Why did Jim Rutherford feel that bringing back Corvo was a good move?
Well, the price was right, and, you know, Corvo has had kind of an up-and-down career, but certainly has played his best hockey when he was with Carolina. And he seems comfortable here, away from kind of that glare that he felt in Ottawa and they felt in Boston and some other places. I mean, Joe just likes it here. And obviously Eric Cole, who was one of his closest friends on the team, won't be with him this time, so that'll be new. But, you know, it's certainly a situation where Joe has been a pretty good player for the Canes in terms of adding to the power play and moving the puck and doing some of those things. And once again, when you're able to pick up a defenseman like that for that kind of price, I guess they just felt like it was the right move, and it's not a long-term deal, so we'll just see how that plays out as well.
Chip, last question. You know, the team spends a lot of money. They go out and acquire some new players. And, you know, do expectations increase accordingly for this team? You know, we don't know when the season's going to start, but, you know, what is the sort of the benchmark to make this a successful year in Carolina?
Well, I think expectations are pretty high. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that a lot of Hurricanes fans expect them to, you know, contend and possibly win the division title. You look at what happened last year. The Florida Panthers made some moves and really helped their team and wound up winning the title. And I think it's going to be a very competitive division. And certainly a lot of fans you know, feel like they can win the division. And obviously the key for the franchise now, and a very important season for them in terms of reaching the playoffs again. They haven't been there since 2009 and certainly have had some disappointments there, losing out on the last day of the season 2 years ago. But, you know, this is important for them to get back to the playoffs. It means a lot to the franchise, both financially and in terms of trying to build a fan base here. So you talk about expectations. Are they expecting to win the Stanley Cup? I wouldn't think so. Are they expecting to get to the playoffs? Yes.
Chip Alexander from the Rally News and Observer, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hopefully we'll see you in Winnipeg sooner rather than later.
Hope to see you in October, guys.
Take care, Chip. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chip.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. guys going to work on your headphones this week?
Give me the headphones.
Considering that Ezzy's now wearing Richard's headphones, and Ezzy, there you go. Nice, you know, professionalism first and foremost. I got
enjoy that earwax, Richie.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyways, big thank you to Chip Alexander from the Raleigh News and Observer. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
You realize that Richie now...
I'm doing something right now. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill.
I got the finger point there.
That's right. Located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne, the Cheer Bar and Grill is your destination for the best in sports action. Everywhere you look, big screen HD TVs mean you won't miss a minute of the game. Pool tables, foosball, bubble hockey, and golden tea make for a great night out at the Cheer Bar and Grill. The best patio in Osborne Village means inside or outside, great times are to be had at the Cheer Bar and Grill. No, now you are interrupting me to say
people
something
that came
interesting.
And, people that came and hung out with us at the Cheer this year would know that we were there for every Jets away game. Mm-hmm. We did the trivia and we had drink specials and everything. I really miss that. And, you know, I'm getting a little bit nostalgic here. But, you know, the talk of this lockout is troubling because we really established a good thing there. And we will be back at the Cheer this year doing every Jets away game.
Thanks for...
Well, people want to know this stuff. I am a huge part of people's social lives.
What about your own social life?
Well, his own social life consists of sitting at home and tweeting, so, you know, take that for what it's worth.
I do things.
We have a new feature later on the show, too.
We do?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, you didn't prepare a show plan. You think just because it's this...
I have a show plan. I'm looking at the show plan as we
speak. You never sent it to us.
Well, frankly, I knew you weren't going to read it anyway.
It's not a very good show plan anyways.
It's a very good show plan. In fact, let's continue on with the show plan and talk about Max Pacioretty signing a new contract with the Montreal Canadiens, a six-year, $27 million deal. 23 years old. He had 65 points in 79 games last year. Second on the team in scoring with 33 goals. Most people still think of Max Pacioretty as the guy who got... turnbuckled by Zdeno Chara a couple of years ago. Is this now the contract where he can step up and, you know, shine as one of the future stars of the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, he better. I mean, they're paying him like he's going to. I've always liked his game. He's got a really good wrist shot. He can move well for a big guy.
Yep.
He's got the talent. I mean, I have liked this game.
For the record, I should just interrupt. Sorry for a second. This deal kicks in after the next season.
So just similar to Jeff Skinner, actually.
Similar in some senses. From a contract perspective, you're dealing with a guy, Pacioretty, who will... When this contract is signed, we'll have played 5 years in the National Hockey League, meaning he will be 2 years away from UFA status if the rules are the same under the new CBA whenever that gets signed. So they're essentially buying out, it's a six-year deal, so they're buying out four UFA years here.
Right.
So when you're buying out four UFA years here, I think it's a good deal. I think there obviously is a little bit of risk. You know, obviously that injury will present risk down the road, whether or not anything happens. Hopefully it doesn't. But I think the Habs here, if Pacioretty continues to grow, we're going to get a nice value out of this deal.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, you know, Drew, you mentioned the Zdeno Chara hit, and everyone remembers that because it was just fuel for Habs and Bruins fans. But, you know, he came back last year, and he was their best player. I mean, Eric Cole, no discredit to Eric Cole. Eric Cole had a very good year last year after, you know, he was criticized after the Habs brought him in to get bigger and all that. But Max Pacioretty played well, and he was on the top line. He was playing with David Desharnais, who David Desharnais has to still be signed. And they were mentioning that in the Montreal Gazette, how, you know, Max Pacioretty wants Desharnais back because, you know, he's a guy that gets him the puck. Mm-hmm. Pacioretty is the type of guy that off the wing, he wants to have the puck. He's a shooter. But Richie's right. I mean, you know, it eats up his UFA years, but Max Pacioretty is the type of guy that he's 23. He's a bit of a late bloomer. So in the sense, it's tough to make the Jeff Skinner analogy, because Jeff Skinner came in at 18 and he was, you know, dominant at 18. Pacioretty's taken a few more years. He's turning 24. Mm-hmm. He's blooming late in when you compare him to the Skinners and
Jeff
the Crosbys.
Skinner is the exception, not the rule in terms of players.
Right.
If you tell most teams that your first round draft pick by the time he's 23 will be a 30 goal scorer, you know, you'll be taking that every day of the week.
Chevy and Zinger and the Jets are going to be very happy if Mark Scheifele is putting up 50 points as a 23-year-old, because you're right. That not everybody is going to be, you know, scoring 65, 70 points at 18. But Pacioretty, he loves Montreal, and he loves playing there. And in the sense that they got him for a pretty reasonable rate for a guy that's in that 50, 60-point range.
That's the thing. And he puts the puck on net, 286 shots last year in 79 games.
Yep.
So some people say, oh, we got 33 goals. You know, was he getting lucky, quote-unquote? Was the shooting percentage too high? No. It was actually just around his average for his career.
He just shoots a lot. Which isn't a bad thing.
And he's got a great shot.
Yeah.
And he can move for a big guy, and he can you know, I think that what he's done is become, I think originally after the injury, he was a little bit, had a little bit of trepidation going to the net. He's, I think he's moved past that to a point. And I really do think that this contract, you know, some people are going to say, okay, well, look, you know, 2 years before that, he had 3 goals, and the year before that, he had 3 goals. So he had 6 goals after 2 NHL seasons. Well, on the other hand, it's his perspective. He had 14 goals in 37 games the year before. So you can mention the injury factor as well. However, 33 goals last year as a 23-year-old player, he's going to have 2 years of RFA and then 4 years of UFA. If he gets anywhere close to the 30-goal marker and you're paying him 4.5 a year,
you
in
might
UFA
be getting
years, you're getting a, you're getting yeah. a deal, I think.
You're right, because if he hits UFA status and he's a 30-goal scorer, we've seen what these guys are paying.
Oh, yeah.
And even
especially
under a new CBA,
mid-20s.
It's not going to change. I mean, because these owners still are desperate for talent and
They'll
will go crazy
change.
For it. Everything's inflationary. We've said it multiple times. You know, 5 years down the road from now, whatever it is, if Pacioretty's still putting up big numbers, he's going to get paid $6, $7 million a year.
And also think about the years that they're locking up. They're locking up his 24 through 30 years.
His prime years.
So it's great, you know.
You know, his prime years, I mean, barring anything unforeseen, of course, but I mean, if you say to the guy, you know, I've given you a 6-year contract and it's taking you from 24 to 30, as opposed
better.
To a 6-year contract, you know,
exactly.
from 28 to 34.
Exactly right.
Or you know, Shane Doan's contract where he wants, I think, 12 years from 40 until 52. You know, you're doing a lot better that way.
Gordie Howe is going to skate in his place near the last 2 years of the deal.
Yeah, exactly. Next contract that was signed this week, Wayne Simmons, a 6-year deal, $4 million per season.
Yep.
He's 23 years old. He was acquired from the Kings in the Mike Richards deal last summer. You know,
now he's quickly get in here. He's actually also had 4 NHL seasons under his belt.
Right.
The difference is he's played 82, 78, 80, and 82. So if
he's
you can do
healthy.
The math quickly, you know how many games he's missed in 4 seasons?
I think you can
six.
Count it on 2 hands.
Yeah. Six.
That's
exactly.
very and that's very valuable in negotiations. I like the Wayne Simmons contract. I liked Wayne Simmons when he was on the Kings as a 20-year-old and coming up there on the third line. And, you know, he loves playing in Philly. He did well in the playoffs for Philly last year against Pittsburgh. He's one of those guys. He can play on the second line, but he'll play on the third line. And he's not a primary scorer for them. He's a secondary scorer for them.
Well,
but I mean, again, same age. He's 23 years old. It's actually pretty funny that these guys signed essentially, you know, one day after each other, or maybe they signed on the same day. I don't remember. But, you know, Wayne Simmons had his best year last year. He's a physical guy. You know, very well liked in the dressing room. Everyone remembers the 24/7 documentary. You know, Wayne Simmons is I believe he's from Scarborough.
That's right.
He's a very, very good guy, and you know, he deserves that contract. I really like that contract.
He's got a year in his deal, just like Pacioretty
exactly.
Does.
He's still under the previous deal that he signed. He's playing for 1.75 this year, and then next year his new contract will kick in, and he'll get paid
6-year deal, right?
6 years, $24 million.
Larry Books tweeted, "It's funny how Ed Snyder won." Everybody's behind the 5-year cap, signs him to a 6-year deal with a year left on his contract.
That's why Ed Snyder just doesn't care. Ed Snyder only cares about Ed Snyder. And I think it's pretty apparent when you see that in terms of some of the contracts he signed.
And I think, you know, as far as...
And you know what? I don't necessarily fault him for that.
No.
You know,
he's
Ed Snyder's
successful.
Worried about Ed Snyder's business. He's not worried about, you know...
In a city with the Eagles, the Sixers, and the Phillies, over the past 20 years, 30 years, the Flyers have probably been the most consistently... Maybe supported and
with the exception of that 1 year where they finished, what was it, 29th or 30th?
Yeah.
That was such an aberration. I mean, the Philly, you know, you're right. I like what Ed Snyder does. And the thing is, how many people expected the Philadelphia Flyers, after losing Richards and Carter, to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round? It certainly wasn't me. And, you know, looking ahead, and I've said this before, as far as their forward group, there's still big-time question marks on the back end.
They have,
as far as their forward group goes... Probably the deepest in the entire league.
These
with Braden Shen and Couturier, they've got lots of talent.
Yeah. Very similar. You're buying out again. You're going to have 5 years after this. So you're buying out two RFA years and then 4 UFA years for a player who's young, gets better, can toss the knuckles a bit, can score, can do a lot of things. I mean, will he cap out at, like right now, last year he had 50 points. Will he cap out more of 60? I think 60 will be a cap for him.
He was 28 goals, 21 assists last year for the Flyers.
Pacioretty has more offensive upside.
Yeah, but you know what? If you're paying the guy $4 million a year and he's getting you 28 goals, you're not going to complain about that value. Even if he gets you 25 goals.
I think he's more into the 20 to 25 range.
Seems a little bit high, 28, but you know, these are some of the things you get when you play with offensive skill that the Flyers have.
Yeah.
It's not not a bad problem to have that, you know, you might be getting a few extra bonus goals and get rewarded accordingly. These are all reasonable contracts. And these are all contracts that really go to show you, if you want to look back, if you want to relate it to the CBA, is that teams, first and foremost, are only worried about themselves. Because I have no doubt whatsoever, Gary Bettman has tried to put an edict in place. Don't interfere. Don't sign any long deals. Let's see how this thing plays out. Let's be a unified front. And then you have, the Molsons in Montreal, and you have Ed Snyder in Philadelphia saying, no, we're taking care of our own business interests first and foremost, and to hell with everything else that's going on around us.
And you need us anyways.
Yeah, and you need us anyways, exactly.
Well, and you're stuck with us.
Yeah, well, not stuck with us. Bettman's not going to try and pull a power play on those guys, because that's a one-way ticket to being relieved of your commissioner duties right there.
That's a one-way ticket from Bill Daly to the top of the NHL commissioner's seat.
I thought Drew was going to become the next commissioner.
Falsehood. And I think Bettman likes his $8 million a year salary.
It's true.
That's a term from your era, the dirty 30s.
Everything about you is dirty, Ezzy. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.